Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And I don't know about you, but fall has really been giving us a lot of warm hugs here, and especially in the Pacific Northwest. It's drippy, it's cool, it's a perfect time to cozy up and to just get ready for a wonderful day. And a great way of doing it is interviewing guests like my guest that I'm having today. Rosalind Burney is her name, and we're going to be talking about one of my favorite critters, and that is horses. Yes. I have always had a passion for them, and Rosalind Burney has a passion for them, too. And it's because of how her life ended up bringing her into contact with these magnificent animals, and it had a tremendous impact on her life. And that's why her book, When the Horses Whisper, is a significant one, because she shares her experiences with you, the reader, and today she's going to be sharing them with us on air. Rosalind Burney, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. Good to be with you.
Now, Rosalind, you are a woman that is very academic. You have been and are a university professor. You teach engineering and technology, and this is so what we would describe left brain, that to have the experiences, I call them, this is how I would call them, the spiritual soul-reaching experiences that you have had with the, with these wonderful, wonderful horses. You really flipped the coin of thinking, didn't you?
In some ways, Donna, it's an answer to a prayer to become more connected to my heart and a little bit less of a prisoner to my very strong intellectual predisposition. The horses have really helped me with that. It brings me into a deeper balance, I feel.
Animals are so significant. I think nature is awesome. I think life is awesome, to be perfectly frank. And when you got involved with the horses, it caused a real shift. And I find it so interesting how life brings to each individual particular experiences that open them up to a greater part of themselves that either had been shut down when they were a child, or maybe because of environments, cultural dispositions that we're raised in, we go, oh, no, that's not supposed to be done, or we shouldn't look at things like that. It sort of helps us to get past what I call paradigms of fear. And your journey was an interesting one, but I really liked how in the very front of your book, you have a statement by Daniel Zeledon Donzo. He said, I started my practice as a veterinarian 6 years ago and did not have any particular interest in horses. Working in a small rural town of Costa Rica, I have to deal with all the animals that need my service, including cows, dogs, cats, goats, sheep, and of course, horses. And when he started working with horses, it opened up a whole part of himself that had been totally closed. And he said he didn't realize what was happening to him. And when he came across your book, he began to understand the phenomenal link between the horse and the human being. And I loved what he said. They need to be respected, and if we could extrapolate these lessons to our daily life, we will grow as human beings in peace and harmony with every being that surrounds us. This is from a vet. Now, someone might say, well, this is a vet. He's working with animals all the time. Of course he would have that feeling. That's not necessarily true, is it?
I think that his heart was touched. I think that he was opened. So veterinary practice can be very cerebral. You know, it's like much of medical practice. You have to really have deep knowledge, access to a lot of information, an acute sensitivity to what could be wrong, but also just sort of, it's very right brain. It can be very right brain practice, just like the practice of medicine on human beings. You're under a lot of pressure, you have a lot to do, you have a lot of demands on your time, you have to figure it out, get the right meds, and move on. I think what happened with him is, as you say, a shift. And I can't speak for him, but what I know of what happened for him is that it caused him to stop and ask, oh my, what can I understand differently about animals? And mm-hmm. horses helped him to ask that question. That's
your
what happened
book.
To me.
Mm-hmm. When the horse and, whisper, you have the most gorgeous horse on the front of your cover. She is just exquisite. Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful white horse with just soft hues of gray in her coloring. You say the wisdom of wise and sentient beings. Tell us how you were first brought into contact with horses. Because you're not a horse person. You never owned a horse.
Oh, no, I've never owned a horse. I always, you know, as a child, I wanted a horse, but didn't a lot of us. I grew up in the inner city, so my exposure to horses was pretty limited to Philadelphia police horses and a summer camp that my parents sent me to outside of the city back when I was about 12. When I got to that camp, I fell in love with a horse named Aladdin, and he meant a lot to me. I always tried to ride him when we went out on trail rides. But then my city life came back to reality, and the best I could do is, you know, have ceramic and toy horses to put in my window. As an adult, I would go on trail rides now and then, but, you know, few and far between, and horses were really not a part of my world at all. And then 3 years ago, I went on a personal vacation alone to Costa Rica. I was there to finish writing a novel, but also to restore and balance and heal myself from having a very difficult year, end of a 30-year marriage, etc. While there, I got on a horse to go on a trail ride just to relax, and we were crossing the river, Arenal, and my horse stepped up onto the far bank, and it was a little muddy, so, you know, he slipped just a little bit, but I actually fell off. And I fell off, got soaked head to toe in the water, and stood up laughing because I must have released something. I was laughing. But the horse, his name was Teton, looked back at me in horror. Now, anybody could see an expression on a horse's face and in their body language and their disposition if they're horrified. But what happened, Donna, is I got on the horse to ride back to the stable. And I heard him speaking, and I'd never had that experience before. I heard everything he was saying about how he felt guilty, that it was his responsibility, he'd never let anybody fall before. And then the clincher, just before we got back to the stable, he said, I realize that you've understood what I've been saying, and therefore I'm going to ask you, please tell my owner, tell Debbie, I don't need any more training. Well, the owner, and I don't use that word lightly, I actually would rather say companion because I don't think it's right to think that we own these species, but Debbie was shocked, and she said, how do you know about that? I said, about what? She said, how do you know? The stableman and I for the last week have been talking about how he needs to go back into training. And then I got the hint that maybe really I hadn't hit my head, nothing was wrong. I really had opened somehow to be able to understand. I talked to 15 horses in her herd over the course of the last couple of years, and I learned quite a bit from them, some of it helpful for diagnosing medical problems, but some of it wisdom about human beings and our relationship with horses.
Now, people listening to this, hearing you say that this horse talked to you, they're going to say, oh, good gracious, don't tell me she's trying to be a Dr. Doolittle. And I just have to chuckle, because that's a favorite movie of mine. I really believe we can communicate with animals, and I just think it's getting past our own limitations. I mean, animals have a way of communicating that's just phenomenal, as far as I'm concerned. And just because they can't vocalize as we vocalize doesn't mean they don't have a language of their own. And horses are extremely intelligent. They are very, very sensitive to so many things. And when you come across a movie like The Horse Whisperer, Sometimes people will think that's woo-woo. It is not, because the man that was the basis of that movie, Buck, he lives this every single day. This was someone that went through a lot of trauma when he was growing up and developed an empathy, an understanding, and a communication capacity with animals that is a different expression than what you're speaking about. But nonetheless, it's just as valid.
I watched the documentary. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. I think that what you're saying is important, because many times people are not aware that they can receive information. And sometimes it can be very clear, like someone's talking to you in your head. Other times it may be a visual. Other times it's something you feel in your body. You just know. It's very, very interesting. And all of us, to one degree or another, can experience this. And it's learning to trust it. You actually came to trust it fairly quickly, because when you were a child, you did this quite naturally, but you had stifled it, and then you opened back up to it. Is that true?
That's right. That's absolutely right. When I was a child, I was aware of the presence of beings that had already passed on and could communicate with them and would tell my parents what I was seeing and hearing. My mother was concerned. I was quite young, barely 3 when this started, maybe 2. And she talked to a psychologist who said, "Oh, I'm worried about your daughter." Then she talked to a different psychologist who said, "Read Edgar Cayce, There is a River, and you'll understand."
Mm-hmm.
This was back in the late 50s. Thank goodness that he gave her that reference, because then she didn't have to be afraid of me. And it did come very naturally at a very young age. Over time, I think what happens to most of us is we come more into the material world, where we use fairly limited senses, important senses, but fairly limited senses to guide us and through our lives. I was fortunate to get opened back up. I think by falling off the horse, I had a choice to get rigid and be afraid, or to let go and let it happen. And in the process of letting go and letting it happen, I think something did open. I will add, however, Donna, that one of the horses said to me that I had been identified as one who was capable of carrying this message. So, in effect, I've been given a gift so that I can use it. I say that also believing that other people surely have the potential to use similar gifts.
I agree. I agree. And I think the more that we can talk about this and communicate about it, the more it gets out of the woo-woo stuff. I really think that the human being, we're an animal ourselves, and we need to recognize that, yes, we can do certain things. We can design, we can develop, we can build in a way that most other species of the animal kingdom are not able to do. But that doesn't mean we know it all. And we can learn a lot from those that we share this planet with. That's my feeling. But you have to slow down to be able to do that. And this is something that you found that you had to do. And that is one of the gifts I feel that you were given with your interaction with the animals, because you had to separate yourself from the busyness of everything that was around you. You had to be discerning, make a choice, and say, this is something that I am comfortable with. Now, it took you a while because you questioned yourself, which is healthy as far as I'm concerned. Tell us about Jitana. She was just an absolutely wonderful, wonderful animal. And is she the horse that's on the cover?
No, it's not. Jitana's in the book, however. She's the second horse that I spoke with after the owner of this community, Leaves and Lizards, is a cabin retreat. After she heard me say that about Titan, the next day she asked me if I would please talk to Jitana, because Jitana was, something was clearly wrong with her. She had to be taken off the trail as a trail ride horse. She was agitated, bucking, unpleasant to be around, and so troublesome that they thought they might have to get rid of her. But she was a beloved horse, and they were very sad and confused what was going on. I asked Chitana if she would speak with me, and she just stood there and didn't say anything. And it took a while. I kept pleading with her, Chitana, please. It's important. And finally, I said to her, I whispered to her very close to her ear, Debbie said she may have to get rid of you if she can't sort this out. And Chitana turned completely around and put her chin on my shoulder and opened her eyes. And she said, what did you just say? And then she went from there, and she explained everything that was going on with her and what she needed. And it turns out that she was very agitated because she was worried about a pregnancy that she was carrying. No one knew she was pregnant. And she had a lot of responsibility to care for the herd. Turns out she was the lead mare. And she felt that she couldn't both take care of the herd and tend to the baby in her who needed her energy and attention. She wanted to be put out in the field and left alone for a while. Well, as it turns out, she lost the baby, and she must have sensed that that was coming and that she needed to give it the full attention. No one had any idea that either she was pregnant or that she had a problem pregnancy. She's a wonderful horse. There are no problems with her now that that was all resolved. And it was just important that she be heard and understood so that she could take care of what she needed to attend to.
Animals carry memories. Horses carry memories. Every creature I've ever met, whether it's a bird, a dog, a cat, it doesn't make any difference. There's a basset in our neighborhood, and you know how soulful they look. All of these animals that I have had interaction with through the years, and this basset is the most recent. A year ago, this basset wouldn't even let anybody come up to her. She just was gorgeous basset. And she had been rescued. She had been told by the owner, had been told by the breeder that, oh, nothing really happened to this dog. Well, a year later, the dog's name is Zippy. Zippy is so much friendlier. But Zippy's in a home now that gives a lot of love. But Zippy walked up to me and walked up to my little Scotty, Victor. And I said, oh, she knows now. She's safe. And the comment was made, this dog had to have gone through something. The person that said, oh, nothing really happened to this dog, that's not the truth. Animals are affected psychologically by brutality. You have a story in here about Mr. Big, and that's why I'm bringing this up, even though it's about dogs. Horses, it's so tragic, the brutalization so many of these magnificent animals go through by human beings. And he went through this. And he was in the care of someone that was violent and was very angry. And this is a psychological patterning. And anytime someone thinks that an animal is a dumb animal, they need to have their heads examined, as far as I'm concerned. Mr. Big is a very powerful story in your book about how trauma affects animals. Tell his story.
Yeah, he was really quite brutalized, and they would torture him, and he has markings. You can see where he'd been tortured on his face, but they would tie his tail to keep him from being able to move. Anyway, Mr. Big was sort of depressed, forlorn. He was very inward, and he showed me, mostly what he did was he showed me images, but he also spoke with me. And as I spoke his story out loud and told his new caregiver everything that he was sharing about what had happened, the weight started to shift. You could almost feel a lightening around his being, but it wasn't apparent for a while. And then one of the caregivers said to Debbie, what happened to Mr. Big? He seems like an entirely new horse. When I went back to see him the next time, I recognized very little about the original Mr. Big. He was jovial. He was happy to be there. He couldn't wait for people to ride him. He had a new lease on life, much like we human beings do when we're finally recognized, finally heard, and we can share our story and be understood and appreciated. He is an amazingly delightful and, as you say, powerful presence to be with. And he was almost, purchased from the man that abused him. And Mr. Big explained that horses take in what they're given. So if they're given anger, they take it into themselves. And he was given all kinds of hostility, took it in. What he explained was that when his next owner came along, caregiver came along, he felt much relieved and he loved him. But that caregiver couldn't afford to keep Mr. Big, so he put him on the market. And he ended up being with Debbie, but they had access. Mr. Big asked, could I please have time with my previous caregiver because I miss him and he means a lot to me. And I'm so grateful for what he did to help me out. So, yes, horses, they have memories, although sometimes when I'm listening, I get confused because their sense of time is different. Their memories are almost in their cells, it's right in their body.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes
Absolutely.
They're showing me, what they're showing me is the future, and I think it's the past, and I have to have a little bit more discernment to trust what I'm seeing because their sense of time is not like ours. They don't have the clock time, which is a fairly artificial measurement that we've
mm-hmm.
created. But I agree entirely that they come to us with carrying so much of their past. And we then contribute to what they carry off into their future. We have a huge effect on who they are and how they feel about themselves and how they feel about life, just like we do our children and our family members. It's a huge responsibility to take a domesticated animal into your life. And part of what he taught me and many of the horses are teaching me is we really need to recognize that they are there for us as much as we can allow them to be, but it has to be an even, genuine exchange of caring and love.
Juano, this horse to me has just got such a personality, and he is totally, totally a Costa Rican. In his temperament. And when I say that, there was a vitality to Juano. Who is Juano? I mean, this is a wonderful horse. And tell us about your interaction with him.
Juano's a stallion, and he's used for breeding. But before he was brought onto Debbie and Steve's property, he was the fastest racehorse in Costa Rica. He had won many, many awards. He was famous. Famous.
Mm-hmm.
He came to us, to them, and I met him maybe within a couple days of his coming, and I walked up to that horse. I was stunned by his beauty, and his presence was very powerful, and he knows who he is. And I fell in love immediately. I also felt that he was responding to me very deeply. I had dreams of him that night that I feel, as woo-woo as this sounds, I truly believe he sent me some essence of himself, and we, in a dream state, continued to get to know one another. Well, the next day, I walked into the stable, and I walked up to a different horse, and I was petting him and telling how wonderful it was to meet him and how I felt so in awe of him, and good morning, Juano, and it's so nice to see you again. And then I felt odd, like something was going on, and I looked, and there was another horse across the other side of the stable staring at me in disgust. And I thought, uh-oh. Well, it turns out that I was not saying hello to Juano. Juano was on the other side of the stable. Juano would not talk to me for a week. He would not give me the time of day. He would not look at me. And when I went up to him to apologize, he turned his butt to me. Juano became one of my most important teachers.
In other words, make sure you know who you're talking to.
Well, that's what he said. Oh, my goodness. The day I was almost in tears because every day for that week I would try to apologize. I would try to get his attention, and he wasn't having it. Finally, the day we were leaving for the airport, I jumped out of the car and went one last chance, and I said, Juano, I'm leaving now. I don't know what else to do. Please, what else can I do? I made a mistake. And then he turned around, and he looked at me, and he said, you think you have a great new gift. Well, you will not be able to use it until you learn that we are each individuals and we have our own names, and you need to know who we are before you come in here announcing yourself as someone who communicates with horses. Donna, he floored me. I felt humbled. I felt tearful. I thanked him, and I left with a very important lesson about humility and really paying attention to honor and recognize them for the individuals that they are.
Wow,
that's
so true. Yes, and it's amazing when you see the different temperaments. Horses are being used and have been used in, I'd say, the last 15, 20 years in therapy work, and they just, I know of one person that was a guest on my show many years ago, and she said the horses actually will pick the person that needs them. And to read her story about individuals that have had emotional trauma and how they will be attracted to a certain horse and maybe that's not the horse they should be with and that horse doesn't want anything to do with them. It's amazing the communication that goes on. And I think that in your book, your stories are just absolutely wonderful. And it just shows how we're all connected, as far as I'm concerned. When I went through your book, I thought, boy, Rosalind really is bringing out the fact that there is no separation in truth, and we have to be willing students to open up and learn about a communication capacity and to learn about the fact that every animal does have its own persona. For so long, humanity in the scientific world has lumped monkeys into the monkey group and the dog into the dog group and the cat into the cat group until they really take the time to find out that you've got unique personality too. And I think anyone that works with them, and that'll be the first thing they'll say, oh, George over here, you really have to pay attention because he doesn't like his oats served in this way. And then Marilyn over here, she likes things this way. And people will say, oh, my goodness, you're trying to humanize them. No, they really are unique and special. Now, you have a website, whenthehorseswhisper.com, Rosalind, and I just think your book is marvelous. If you had a message you wanted to leave with my listeners today, what would that be?
Oh, that I think there's an incredible opening happening for all of us to become more deeply aware of our connection to other species and to the planet itself, that it's all alive and we are very much a part of it, but we're not the most important and only part of that living being that is the earth and its creatures. That would be the message. And listen to your own animals and trust what you hear because they're right there with us, always communicating. Yeah.
Oh, that is so true. That is so true. I know because I live with it every day. And it's a joy, and sometimes it's perplexing, but that's what causes us to grow, isn't it? Just like with you, stepping into a world with horses that allowed you to open up and recognize this wonderful talent and gift you have of communication with them. And as you said, it's been both humbling, it's been exhilarating, and it's an ongoing journey of experience for you. Congratulations.
I'm grateful that this experience is with me now. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
It's been a delight having you as a guest. Rosalind Burney, her last name is spelled B-E-R-N-E, When the Horses Whisper. Oh, this is the type of thing you want to read before you go to bed and be by yourself and just sort of take it in. It's wonderful. It's just a wonderful, wonderful book. WhenTheHorsesWhisper.com. Check out the website. I think you're really going to enjoy the journey and the experience that Rosalind shares with you. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away. We've got more good things to share. We'll be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime, or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. That's right. You can call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here's the toll-free number, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Rosalind's wonderful book about horses brought to mind a very personal experience I had when I was in Ohio. And this goes back, a few years. And there was a woman I had the privilege of meeting. I was doing a training in someone's home with a group of people, which I do occasionally. People will request that. And unknown to me, the woman who was my hostess was very much involved with a lady by the name of Kathleen who rescued cheetahs. Ah, yes, you've seen them on television. Maybe you've been fortunate enough to be in a zoo and look at these magnificent cats. Well, if we know a little bit about history, we know cheetahs were used by royalty for hunting and often just to be the local pussycat, if you will, in the royal courtroom, or court, I should say. Beautiful, beautiful animals and exceedingly fast, absolutely amazing. Well, my hostess said, "Would you like to see a cheetah?" I said, "Sure." Little did I realize that I was going to be on the floor with a cheetah. And little did I realize I was going to get whacked by a cheetah's tail, which, believe me, is a very painful experience. This incredible creature that I had the chance of meeting had a fascinating story behind it. Now, Kathleen had a good-sized house. She also lived on a very good-sized portion of land. And it was all fenced in, and she rescued cheetahs. She was a woman of wealth and positioning. In fact, she traveled to Africa frequently, and it set up, oh my goodness, I think it was 2,500 acre, I believe that's what it was. It was a huge, huge refuge for these cats, because at that time, they were not surviving very well. And unknown to most people, cheetahs do not reproduce easily, and they have to be cared for. They are very sensitive cats to changes in environment, etc. And this cat that I had the pleasure of petting, being down on the floor with, this is a wild cat. It was huge, just fully mature. This cat had a story in its history that was quite interesting. It had been brought over from Africa to be in a zoo. Obviously, it had been rescued. The animal was dying. Kathleen, among the zoo people, is known as being the person with the magic touch when it comes to these cats. She has this phenomenal capacity of connecting with them, and they trust her. There's just this cat whisperer side, I guess you could call it, long before the word became something that we associate with as we do today. Well, what Kathleen told me was very interesting, because this animal was in this zoo environment and was dying. Now, they asked her, and I believe it was someplace in the Southwest. I want to say Colorado, but I could be wrong, so I'll just say in the Southwest somewhere. And they asked her if she would come out because the animal was not going to make it. And it was young. It was a very young cat at the time. So she had turned to the woman who is my hostess and asked her if she would go with her to work on this. The gal said, "Oh, I'd love to. I'm just fascinated by the cat." And the husband of the hostess decided to go along as well. So here are the three of them. They go in when they arrive at their destination, which was this zoo.
they're taken in to this area that is protected so that the animal can be taken care of. And this young cat was not responding, wasn't eating. They were really concerned because it was dying. It just had no will to live. So Kathleen walks into this area. And of course, the animal is in a large cage. They want to give it space to move. And it was just very lethargic. Well, my hostess and her husband were there with Kathleen. The cat looked at all of them, gets up on its feet, and walks towards the edge of its cage, totally focused on the husband of the hostess. And Kathleen is very sensitive to everything that the animals do. She said, "I want you to step forward." She tells the husband to step forward so that the cat has a better look. That cat looked at this guy with such intensity. Kathleen said, "Okay, something's going on here. This cat is relating to you. I want you to go in that animal's cage, and I want you to do exactly what I tell you." Now, this guy looked at her like she was from another planet. "What are you telling me? You want me to get in a cage with a wild animal?" He was terrified. She said, "No. You need to know this animal will bring you no harm. This is a young cat. You need to go in that cage." She said, "I need to stay back. You need to go in the cage. And I want you to go into the cage. I want you to go up against the wall. And I want you to lower yourself very slowly down. And I want you to sit on the floor. And I want you to put your legs out in front of you." He really thought she was cuckoo. She said, "This animal's life is standing in the balance. Please do what I ask you. No harm is going to come to you. This animal is not going to hurt you." He went into the cage against every logical thought in his mind. He went into the cage, followed her instructions, and she kept talking to him so that he wouldn't get overly excited and anxious, because she said the animal is not, and the cat just watched him. The next action on the part of the animal transformed this man's life. The cat walked over to him once he had lowered himself down, his back against the wall. He lowered himself slowly, just as Kathleen was instructing him to do, down to the floor. And that cat walked over and put its head and paws in its lap and nuzzled him. Just put his head, and he purred so loudly, this cat purred so loudly, that you could hear it from 10, 15 feet away. Kathleen said, "Okay, next thing, this cat has not been eating. You need to feed the cat." And he just looked at her. She said, "This animal has bonded with you. We don't know why. It's animal deeply, deeply feels safe with you." And that was the issue. Kathleen recognized that the cat did not have a sense of belonging with anything in its current environment. So she started talking to the people that were the caretakers. And she found out how this animal had arrived at the zoo. This animal, when it had been brought over into the United States, into a particular zoo, had been taken care of by a male caretaker who dearly loved the cat. The cat and this man bonded very strongly. The man had died. He had a heart attack. He died right on the spot. There was no one else that had created a bond. And so this cat identified with a male. When Kathleen asked about the height of the man, the build, everything else, it fit the husband of the hostess. He fit it perfectly. So the cat, as ill as it was and as weak as it was, thought it was its caretaker. Well, there was a bonding that occurred. So Kathleen, when she found out all this information, she had to be something like a detective. she found out all this information and she shared it with this man that was sitting with his cat. He stayed with this cat for 1 month. And he said he would never, ever again look at any animal in the way he had, as he had in the past. Now, this cat was the one I was sitting on the floor with, and it was very healthy. And Kathleen would bring in the animals that were ill, and she would take care of them. And the cheetah would run on our property, and she had a particular machine that had the rabbit going through high grasses, which was part of the natural environment for the cheetah. And, of course, they can run like 70-plus miles an hour. They do it in a very short space. They can't keep it up for a long time. I watched this incredible creature. She had it in her family room, in her house. But she knew what she was doing. I wouldn't recommend this for anybody. But she knew what she was doing. This cat was healthy, was happy, and because of one man that just happened to go along with his wife on a trip to see an animal that was dying to try to save its life. And to the best of my knowledge, that cat is still leading a very rich and full life. Like I said, Kathleen is known for her magic touch and her perception and understanding of these magnificent animals. There is that relationship. Cats and animals of all types, even birds, they're finally beginning to acknowledge they know grief, they know pain and suffering. Just because we cannot see or perceive that, many times people perceive different factions of life as being mindless, and they aren't. They have their own expression and their own life experience they're going to go through. I'll tell you, I've had so many experiences with animals that it just makes me aware of how little I really know. And the joy of life should be, that's terrific. And you may say, why is it terrific, Donna? It's terrific because it means you can grow into a greater part of yourself. You can grow into a greater understanding of so many things. You can see them in the way that they are and understand that there's a place for everything. There really is. And honor and respect that life force. And it's so important. It's not woo-woo. It is honoring and respecting, again, life itself. Because it is something we need to honor and respect. When we can do that, we make this world a better place. Instead of going to war to destroy, uproot, decimate whatever may be in the local area, we'll see, let's think about this. How are we going to resolve this? How are we going to work through this? And I realize that's not always easy to do because we all have our baggage. We all have different issues, paradigms. But sometimes if we grow up enough to realize that we can make a shift, and we can work with things differently, it makes a difference in the overall environment of the world. Don't ever forget about the story of the butterfly, how a butterfly's wing can affect something that you're not able to see, sometimes in the most unusual ways. Life is fascinating that way. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. If you want to give me a buzz, 888-627-6008. Oh, by the way, I didn't give you the recipe for this wonderful Finnish bread. And I wanted to do it because it's a very healthful bread. But more than that, it's got a good taste to it. The Finns really know how to make something that's hearty, especially with the winter months. And I'm going to share it with you when we come back and a little bit of other stuff, too. So don't go away. And if you want to call me, I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Again, 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors. A bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere. First thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top of the line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to chat, is 888-627-6008. Rye is a cereal grass, and it is very closely related to wheat, and it is one of the most important cereal crops in the United States. Now, rye is used to make flour, malt liquors, whiskey, even gin, and a Russian drink, kvass, K-V-A-S-S. It's also been used as animal fodder, and usually it's mixed with wheat flour to make rye bread, and that has always been, I don't know, I've always liked its texture. It's got a very hearty texture to it. And, of course, the people of Central and Northern Europe and Slavic countries, it was part of the basic food supply for, still is in many ways, pumpernickel is what we would normally call it. It's a very dark, heavy bread that is made of rye flour, period. Rye flour and chocolate. Really, really good stuff. And one of the reasons that rye was such a popular cereal grass is because it could be grown in colder and damper climates than regular wheat can. So it's a very hardy cereal grass. And they suspect that it originally came from Asia. And they have found in certain archaeological sites that rye was even grown in areas of Egypt. And there's early traces, of course, in cold, cold northern Europe. Romans loved it. And when the Europeans found out about other grains, then they decided that this was poor people's food. Well, my goodness, it was a healthy bread. It was a hearty bread. Had a lot of nutrition in it. And actually, it's got protein, potassium, and B vitamins in it. Not high amounts, but it does have it. Now, this recipe for Finnish bread is, I think, great for wintertime. Actually, you can have it all year round, but it's especially good to have. So here are the ingredients. 1.5 cups of hot water. 1.5 cups of hot water. You're going to need a tablespoon each of sugar and salt, 2 tablespoons of butter. You're going to need 1/2 cup of water, 1 package of dry yeast, or 1 cake compressed yeast, whatever you prefer. You're going to need 3 cups of rye flour, and you're going to need 2.5 cups, approximately, of unsifted all-purpose flour. Now, this is how simple it is. Your hot water, once it's measured, you put it into a large mixing bowl. You put in your sugar, your salt, and your butter, and you let it cool. Of course, your butter is going to melt and blend. And then you're going to take 1/2 cup of that water, put it into a small bowl. And the bowl can be warm, but for your dry yeast, you should have it warm, about 105 to 115 degrees for dry yeast. And if you're going to use the compressed yeast, then you use the temperature should be about 80 to 90 degrees. And that's so that it can rise. And I'll give you a tip. And I learned this from my husband because he was taught this by his mother. If you want yeast to rise faster, now you can get the fast-rising yeast at the store, but if you want it to come to life quicker, add a little bit of sugar, just a pinch of sugar to it, and it'll just start foaming like nobody's business. And you put your yeast into the water, let it stand for a few minutes, stir until it's dissolved, and then you add the yeast mixture and the rye flour to the first mixture you've got. Of course, the hot water is going to cool down substantially. And you want to beat until smooth. I like using an electric mixer. Yes,
My arms get very tired trying to beat this stuff. Then you want to add 2 cups of your all-purpose flour. You want to mix it well. And then just add enough additional flour to make a soft dough. And then you want to knead it until it's elastic. And, oh, that's a great thing to do. The kneading of the bread, and it's going to take you about 8 to 10 minutes to do it. Put it in a greased bowl, turn degrees all sides, and you let it rise in a warm place. Now, if you're in an area like I am, where you've got the dampness, higher humidity because of rain, that type of thing, a tip I was given by somebody many years ago, and it works. Put it inside your oven, put on the oven light, and then just let it rest. I cover it with a towel. I don't put plastic wrap over it or anything else. I just put plain, ordinary towel over the top of the bowl. And there's enough warmth with the light on in the oven that your bread is going to rise, regardless of what your weather is like outside. Usually, if I put it on the counter, especially during the winter months here, it will take hours for stuff to rise just because of the humidity in the air and the temperature variance. Then once it's risen, you double in bulk, about 45 minutes is what it'll take. You punch the dough down, divide it into halves, shape it into 2 loaves, put it in greased loaf pans, 9 by 5 by 3 inches. Again, let it cover it, let it rise. And until it's doubled in bulk, that's going to take about 40 minutes. And your oven, if you have 2 ovens, which I do, you can preheat the oven once the bread has risen the second time. And it 400 degrees is what you bake it at for about 30 minutes or until it's done. Of course, all you do is tap it with your knuckle, and if it sounds hollow, then you're going to find that your bread is done. And, of course, you want to let it cool because it's tough to cut, but let it rest in the baking dishes for, maybe 5-10 minutes, and then put it out on a rack to let it cool. We at the SIBO household, when I bake bread, we like to have a slice of it when it's still slightly warm. There's just something utterly delicious about bread that's freshly baked. We all love the fragrance of it when it fills the kitchen. Just absolutely terrific. But this is a hearty bread. It goes great with soups. It's wonderful with your favorite preserves, and it's very, very filling. But it's a finished bread, and it is a bread that you can serve your friends and family, and it's good for them, too. Donna Sebo here. I just wanted to share a little bit about him because I know we just have a couple of minutes left here. There is really quite a move on with the smartphone, and you've got hundreds of thousands of apps that are available once you've got one. But something is changing. And this is going to be occurring in 2014. And this is a new feature where it's going to ask you, do you want to contribute to atrocities in the Democratic Republic of the Congo or not? Have you heard about this? It's coming up. Many smartphone components, and those in computers, laptops, and video game consoles, are made in part from tin used for solder, tungsten, which makes the units vibrate, and tantalum, which stores electricity. Where do these components come from? They're called the 3Ts. They come from the Congo. Now, there's a horribly brutal war that has claimed more than 5 million lives since the late 1990s. That's a horrific number. Now, the rebel militias and a renegade army units earn more than $185 million a year because they control access to more than half the mines and collecting bribes and illicit taxes along the trade routes. So electronic firms, as of 2014, are going to have to tell the Security and Exchange Commission whether products containing those proscribed conflict minerals from mines controlled by armed groups in Congo. Companies with conflict-free products may advertise them as such. Hopefully, other companies are going to have more of a conscience about where they get their materials from, but you can have a voice in this. That's right. You can have a choice. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't ever forget, choice is your right. You can exercise it. That's a good thing. This is Donna Sebo. I'm delighted you've been able to join me today. Have a magnificent weekend wherever you are. God bless. I'll talk with you on Monday. Same time, same place. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.